Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander, and once again, I'd like to welcome you to the Socialist Insight. We come to you every Monday with various topics, and this weekend we have, I would say it's a pretty hot topic with many people that are on the left, the right, the center, and what we're going to be talking about today will be the Palestinians and the Israelis, and who's right and who's wrong. Today we have also as our guest, and the sponsor for our program is Ruth Ann. And Ruth Ann, once again, welcome to the program and glad to have you on as my guest today.
Well, thank you. Thanks for asking me. This is a switch. Yeah, I like it.
And Ruth Ann, one of the things that we're going to do, we're going to share some of the things that you do as far as sharing what is taking place on the left and also how you host and support, sponsor various groups and organizations where they can be able to join in on various blog programs such as this one right here. And that way give us an opportunity where we can share a lot of information about what is going on the left that much of the corporate media does not share. Part of what we'll be doing today also is there's been some talk, which we're not going to get into a lot of gossip or whatever, but sharing some of your views, Ruth Ann, and how you take a far or extreme left position, which is not necessarily so. So we're going to hear it from your perspective. We're going to be, as I mentioned, is Palestine versus Israelis, and also who's right and who's wrong. So are you ready, Ruth Ann?
I am, and I want to say that I'm the first to say that I am not an unbiased person on this topic. However, every few days I get a message from somebody thanking me for being fair when it comes to it. So that must mean something.
Well, that's good, and I believe that you're very objective. Sometimes the views, once you start talking about this subject that we're going to be engaging in today, right away you can see people formulate their opinions and they already take their sides, and I have people attacking me in regards to my viewpoints when dealing with this issue. But Ruth Ann, first of all, I just like to start our questioning today and getting into our program. Are you a supporter of a Jewish nation state, or do you believe the Palestinian people have a complete right to occupy the entire nation of Israel?
I'm a one-stater, and I believe that it needs to be one nation. And, of course, the Palestinians have a right to be on their own land anywhere on what is considered Israel, too. And I may add that you get into a lot of Jewish people, especially Orthodox Jews, and not all of them, because this, like you say, this is, people are across the board on it, but many of them, going back to their scriptures, are very against a Jewish state because they say the scriptures say that they should not have one.
Right. Well, also, Ruth Ann, you see over the years, people have their various opinions about when they refer to that part of the world as the homeland, whether it's the homeland for the Palestinians or the homeland for the Jewish people. But has the Palestinians been forced to move away from their homeland over these many years?
Well, they've been forced. They've been burned out. They've been chased out. Some of the people have passed down a key to their homes, to their children, their grandchildren now. And that's very heartbreaking, because some of those houses are still standing, and the squatters are living in them. Well, squatters is another word for settlers, and who have just, stolen their homes. But they're still doing that. The Bedouins are still being displaced, And, you know, so this is nothing new. Right now, orchards are burned.
Now, I want you to share with our listeners when you say burned out, because a lot of people don't understand many of the atrocities that are taking place in that part of the world and how homes are being bulldozed down.
Yeah.
So just share with our listeners, you know, what the landscape looks like. What is really happening when you say burned out? What is going on?
Well, that's it. There's olive groves, orange groves, things like that. I've talked with people who remember as a child their grandfather's orange groves, like in the northern part of Gaza, and it's been totally destroyed. There's a lot of still olive groves in the West Bank, and those are, they're chopped down, they're bulldozed out, they're burned down. You hear about this all the time. I mean, if you're listening, not if you're watching American mainstream media, you're not going to find out any of it, but it's going on. And you know that the people are under, the people that live in the West Bank have to go through checkpoints. Many of them work away from where they live. And 2 a.m, they're at the checkpoint because they won't let them through. They just, a few at a time, and it takes them 4 hours to get through, kind of thing. Women in the West Bank have given birth at the checkpoints because the Israeli soldiers won't let them through to get to a hospital. You know, this is continually going on. Children, there's over 400 children in Israeli prisons, some for stone pelting and others that were accused of it and didn't do it. The children are very rarely allowed to see their parents. They've been tortured with electric prods and things. You know, there's no reason, even in the United States, we don't put our children in prison. Even though we have way too many people in prison, but we don't put children in. There's a lot that's still going on. And once in a while, you'll hear again about, okay, you know, they're building more so-called settlements on Palestinian land, and nobody's doing anything about it.
Why is American mainstream media, why, with much of this that is taking place, and you don't see any of this on television. I mean,
No.
You can look at television all day 24/7, and you're not going to see any of this. Why, just explain to our listeners, why aren't we seeing this? What is the purpose behind that? Because we're talking about atrocities. We're talking about violation of human rights, violation of civil rights, and here we're talking about in the U.S. And over the last 50, 60 years, talking about protecting human rights and civil rights. But why do we keep this hidden from the American people?
Good question. Because we're in league with Israel, because the United States wants some type of a quote-unquote friend, in spite of everything Israel's done to the United States. They want something, some land area in the Middle East, because you know, they have to have a base so that they can be there and steal other countries' resources, which is what the United States does. And it's not the only country that's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But so, no, they don't want people here to know that what their money is funding.
Ruthann, there's a correlation between what is happening in Israel between the Palestinians and Israelis, and what happened here in the U.S. between the whites and the Indians and during the apartheid era in South Africa. And also the suppression of millions of blacks within, like I say, South Africa. But what is the correlation between what we see that is happening in Israel and what has happened here in the U.S. and also what happened in the apartheid movement there in South Africa? Because there's a strong correlation there.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I just have to thank Africa Aid to Gaza. What an organization. They've made a couple convoys, and it's amazing the empathy that the South Africans and different people in different countries like Kashmir, you know, what they feel for Palestine because they experience it themselves. And South Africa has a lot of resources, that's one of the reasons, I believe, that there was
apartheid
for so long.
Not only a lot of resources, they have vast resources.
I know. I mean, it's enormous.
I'm agreeing with you.
That's one of the reasons why apartheid lasted as long as it did, the control. And then also, I mean, just people being the way some of them are, they're racist. But I think that the resources have a lot to do with it. It's the same in the United States, because the Native Americans, you know, here they were with all these things, and the whites that came over, well, they considered them pretty much nothing, so they could take it. And then with the blacks, the whites needed the blacks as slaves to, you know, get their money.
Well, this is what we see in any country, especially when you have where you're colonizing a certain area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what has happened.
Yeah.
These people, they were natives to that area, just like the blacks were natives.
Africa, like the Indians.
The Indians were native here in America.
Yeah.
And then this area was colonized. The same thing happened in Africa, where you had in the southern part of Africa the vast resources that are there in that area, but it was also colonized. But I see the same thing happening right there in Israel, where the lands of these people, the Palestinian people, are just being, they're being forced out and forced into certain pockets. We see that still with the various reservations here in this country.
Definitely.
And it's all about the colonization, and it's all about control.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you hear me from time to time in the position of socialists. We don't believe in borders. We don't believe that we should fence people in. And we saw several years ago, we were talking about, we saw Bush, President George Bush was saying that he wanted to build a southern
wall
to keep keep Mexicans on the southern part of the side of the border. $40 billion $40 billion to build a wall. And we have seen over history that walls don't keep people out.
No.
We saw that in Germany. We saw with the Romans. The Romans built walls throughout Europe. We've seen it in Asia where they have built walls. But walls were always penetrated. But you can still see they use that as a means of to colonize certain areas, and we see the same thing right there in Israel, where
there's the wall, exactly.
Yeah. They create and you post it all the time, and others do the same thing, where you can see where they have built these walls throughout the whole state of Israel.
Yeah,
and eventually those walls are going to come down.
They will. They will.
Right.
Roger Daltrey from The Who, you know, he's very anti-Zionist, and he sings and talks about when the wall comes down. And, it will.
Go
ahead.
Yeah, go on.
I was just going to say there's something that's just, it just like cracks at my heart every time I think about it. I read some time ago, what one of my friends was writing me, PMing me, and talking about the sea, and it was probably Galilee, I'm not sure, but anyway, some body of water, that he has only in his life been able to see from the top of his house in the West Bank because he's Palestinian and he can't get to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that far. I mean, it was just like I could feel a crack coming in my heart. It's, you know, things like this are there. They're completely unacceptable.
Ruthann, I would like to ask you, has the Israeli government unfairly, and when I say fairly, I guess fair is all, it all depends on whomever you're speaking to, but has the Israeli government, has it unfairly occupied lands that the Palestinian people are entitled to?
Well, yes, since they're entitled to the
whole
area.
Some people don't
area.
Believe that they're even entitled to that.
I know. I mean, people, you know, it depends on what kind of propaganda you get. And if you've been told that a certain group of people are underneath you, that you're better than them, you know, this is what armies do. It's what they teach. A friend of mine was in the Marines, and the ironical part is he's from an Arab background, but they were always after them, you know, with their little chants and all about the ragheads, because they have to dehumanize someone. To get
right.
someone to go out and kill another person for no reason, I mean, and there's few reasons that would work, you have to dehumanize that other person. And
now,
so,
one of the things, one of the reasons why I asked you this question, because we hear this crap, and I'll call it what it is, this crap, how we had supposedly weapons of mass destruction, and the U.S. became an occupier, occupier of Iraq, and an occupier of Afghanistan, and then they come up with this crap about that, well, those people, we brought them democracy, and they wanted democracy anyway. And the thing is, you can't, it's still unfair to try to force even democracy on a race or a group of people or a nation of people just because, you know, you have your own, whatever the interest of the occupying nation has. But I see the same thing happening there in Israel, the way that land is being occupied for whatever reasons, whether it's for religious reasons or for whatever the resources or whatever, or for the location. But still, this is the occupation is something that is being forced on a group of people.
Exactly. Well, and, you know, they have been treated, the Palestinians there, because they are occupied. Israel does not abide by the UN, tenets on occupation. But Israel doesn't abide by anything the UN puts out, because they don't have to, because the United States will back them up. Recently,
mm-hmm.
138 countries in the UN recognized Palestine. Now, the United
right.
States was one of the nine that didn't. And there were several that just abstained and didn't show up, 40-some, I think. But this was a switch. In a way, this was a big deal. In another way, well, what's the difference? However, it shows that the countries of the world are getting it. And
right.
they're tired of this abuse. They're tired of
yeah,
Israel.
The rest of the world is getting this.
Yeah. Well, you know, Israel threatens Iran to get the United States there. They threaten Syria. They've been flying over Lebanon. They do all of these things that are illegal by international law, and they pretty much get a free ride.
Ruthann, do you believe a two-state solution is a first step toward resolving the differences between the Israelis and
no,
the Palestinian
because, like I said,
people?
No, I'm a one-stater.
Oh, one-state. You did say that.
I'm
you're
definitely
one-stater.
A one-stater. And
okay.
on another show, I asked.
Now, when you say one-stater, how would you resolve this as a one-stater? What would be the first step?
I would tear down the wall, and I would get rid
uh-huh.
of a lot of the people in the Israeli government. I'm not saying all of them, but
mm-hmm.
the ones who are doing their best to prevent peace. And there's a lot
mm-hmm.
of those. I asked a man who had told me in an interview that he was for the two-state solution. And I said, okay, so how are you going to do this? Now, remember, Pakistan used to be Pakistan and Bangladesh, if you remember,
mm-hmm.
when
right.
it separated from India. And with the country of India between the two, well, you know, that doesn't work. So Bangladesh is now its own country.
Mm-hmm.
But... And we have the Gaza Strip and we have the West Bank, and with Israel in between. So how
mm-hmm.
did you propose to do this? And he was, well, you know, we can build a land bridge across or a tunnel under or, and it's like, oh my God, you know,
right.
knowing the way that the Israeli government is, you think that bridge would last 2 days before they blow it up? You know, stuff like that.
For 2 hours?
Yeah, 2 hours is more like
right.
it. You know, things like that. People are not, you know, they say, well, if we can just do this, we'll work out the logistics. It's like, no, you better think about the logistics of what you're talking about. And I see no reason why it can't be one state, because so many of the Jewish people are very fine. I mean, they're against the way the Palestinians are being treated, and they're fine like they were their parents, their grandparents. They all live together, Jewish people, the Muslims, the Christians. I mean, they would have problems just like, hey, two of my neighbors don't get along either, you know, big deal. I mean, it's that's a human thing, but they didn't have these issues until,
right.
You know, it was decided that there was going to be a grand genocide pretty much of Palestinians who, you know, some did leave. They were chased off. Now it's very hard. One of the things the fighting is over, or the quarreling, is right of return, because the Palestinians who are in other countries like Jordan, there's a lot of Palestinians in Jordan. They would like to come back to their homes.
Right.
And, you know, every time they talk about...
And we have those same issues right here in this country, where we're taking people that are families, and we're deporting them just because, you know, sometimes a crime has been committed where it was something that was a misdemeanor or whatever, but anyway,
right.
They were apprehended, and now families are being separated. Sometimes families where you have a husband and a wife, and they're being separated by this country, this government, which is completely wrong.
It's totally wrong.
And we see that affecting Mexican-Americans across this country, millions of them.
Yeah. One thing, this is off topic, but it's to do with that. President Obama has just recently introduced, or they're talking about, a bill that would give illegal aliens 8 years. It would give them some type of papers, and they would have a temporary visa that would stretch to 8 years.
Oh, part of that road to citizenship.
Yes, right. And at the end of the 8 years, or before that, they could, well, if they didn't do anything towards citizenship at the end of the 8 years, they could be a permanent resident, but they wouldn't be a citizen. But then they could work on it. So he's, you know, that sounds like a step anyway.
Well, I believe we're citizens of the world.
I do too.
Having all of these walls and fences, all of this, we see that is... That is when you look at what capitalism and controlling labor and controlling it across borders, that's what capitalism breeds, that type of madness.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, man.
I'm going to get into something probably a little bit more touchy, and you know, hopefully you don't mind engaging in this. There's been some recent comments on the internet that you are a Holocaust denier. Are you?
No, I'm not. I've never denied any Holocaust, whether it was the German-Polish one in the Second World War, whether it was Darfur in Sudan, whether it was the Africans that were brought to this country, Cambodia, killing fields, the Holodomor in the Ukraine. I've not denied any Holocaust ever. I would like to say that some people... And their ignorance shows, and I understand that, like some of the people that were dissing me in a secret group, actually, of socialists here online. Anyway, they don't seem to get it. The definition of Holocaust, it doesn't say Jew anywhere in it. It is the great destruction resulting in the extreme loss of life, especially by fire, as the nuclear Holocaust. And we all are wanting to prevent nuclear Holocaust. But, I mean, that's just another Holocaust. So when people say, you know...
When you say that about nuclear, that brings to mind when you think about Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the effects it had for decades after that. That was a Holocaust in itself.
Well, it was a Holocaust. And there again...
And the U.S., when we look back on that... They look at it as a Holocaust of people in Japan, and here in the U.S., we look at it as the final step to victory.
Yeah. See, isn't it funny?
That's atrocious when you think about it.
Right, and knowing that it could have been prevented. You know, we are finding out more and more, those of us who are actually looking back everything that I was taught as far as history of this country, and I won't say everything, much of what I was taught has turned out to be a lie. And whether it was just a blatant lie or by omission, it was still a lie. So I'm learning my history all over again. To return to...
I think many of us are.
Yeah, but the people who were trying to, you know, badmouth me, well, they weren't trying to, they were. They were talking, I have to say, they were talking out their butts. But anyway... They don't seem to know the difference between a Holocaust denier, a Holocaust revisionist, or I say I'm a Holocaust truther because I want true numbers. I do not believe the numbers, and I do know.
Well,
of course,
you know, when you're talking about numbers, because when we look at the numbers, how the Holocaust has happened with blacks, it's affected hundreds of millions of two continents. North America, actually several continents, when you think about what took place with the Atlantic crossing and what took place first in Africa and spread throughout Europe, South America, and also the Americas.
Yeah, the whole America.
It affected four continents.
Yeah.
But why do we commonly hear about the Holocaust in Germany? And we don't hear about the Holocaust that occurred, as I mentioned, with the American Indians or the Holocaust that has affected blacks for more than 400 years. And very often when I mention to people, they start talking about the Holocaust. I say, well, you know, and I start talking about the Holocaust that took
Holocaust
place with blacks.
What Holocaust are you talking about?
when I mention about the Holocaust that took place with blacks, you say, well, we need to forget about that. You know, that's you know, we need to, you know, move on. We need to move ahead. And I'm wondering, why should we move ahead and not think about what took place with many of the blacks, what happened in this country, and we still see the effects of it today. All you have to do is go to the inner city, go to many of your urban areas, and see how you have 40% of your blacks are unemployed, over 50% of blacks, black youths that are without jobs. Many blacks that are coming out of college and can't even get a job. Many black families that are suffering. And people say, well, we need to put that behind us. And I'm thinking, like, put that behind us.
How can you?
Let's think about when blacks were being transported across the Atlantic, and very often you had them being transported in positions where they had no movement for weeks on end.
Exactly.
And, that was a Holocaust in itself, not to mention the excruciating conditions once they got here. And many of them were lynched and killed. And then you said, well, let's put that behind us. I don't think we should put that behind us.
I don't think so either.
But why is it that, let's think about the American Indians, what took place with them and how the savage treatment that many of them endured and how they're still suffering from that today and how they're being forced in the reservation. So when I think about this and people, you know, they talk about they talk about the Holocaust. I think we need to look at the Holocaust that has taken place with many races of people because it crosses the race barrier
Holocaust. Totally, totally. And what people don't understand sometimes is also, and this is why, like, the numbers, yeah, the numbers are important for lots of reasons, but, you know, the German-Polish Holocaust is being played. That card is played in our government. And that's why the numbers there really bother me. But you know what you were saying? These numbers, it's not just the people who were tortured at the time or whatever. A lot of people, like in the Holodomor, the Ukrainian thing in 1932-33, it was during peacetime. And yet, they think that possibly about 3 to 3.5 million people were killed there, with about 10 million being affected. And that, because that includes the starvation and all these other things that happened. You know, how can you just say, well, because it's not just people that are executed. There's the I shouldn't have said that. That wasn't they weren't executed. They just died from starvation and bad economic policies. You mm-hmm. know, which could happen anywhere. There's a lot of things that make it up, but it's always preventable.
Right, it's preventable.
And that's the thing. Just like with the Native Americans, and like you have ancestors that came across on ships. Well, I have some Cherokee blood in me, and my people were on the Trail of Tears. So, you know, it's hard to find somebody if you really look who hasn't been affected somehow. And, you know, if you just have heard stories from your family or something, but, you know, go ahead.
What were you saying, Ruthann?
No, I don't even know.
Quite often, even during Black History Month, when people, like to get into various things, you know, looking back on the heritage of, you know, for Black History Month, and I bring that up from time to time. I say, well, you need to just look it up and check out the Black Holocaust. Just pull it up on the internet.
Yeah.
And sometimes I've gone to even blacks, and I'm black myself, and I just ask them, did you pull up that information I told you? Yeah, I will sometime. Like it's not even important, you know.
Right, right.
And that's important. But as I mentioned, every Holocaust, when you look at, and I live here in Southern California, and I see the deplorable conditions that many Indians live, live here in this state. And they shouldn't have to live like that. Many of them living in rundown homes in their existence. And it's not only here, but it's also in the northern part of this country. And this is here in the U.S. But that in itself is a Holocaust. Let me ask you, what is happening with the Palestinian people? And, of course, you just touched on it just very briefly a few minutes ago, where you're talking about how many of their homes are being bulldozed down and how they're being segregated within that country. But in your opinion, what is happening with the Palestinian people? Would you or could you consider that a Holocaust?
Well, it is. I mean, a lot of people consider it a genocide, and it is.
Genocide?
And it is a Holocaust. I mean, what else do you call when people are tortured, when their homes are burned or bulldozed, their orchards are burned? In Gaza, Gaza is different from the West Bank because the West Bank people can go through checkpoints and things. Gaza, they just stay there, and the Israelis are supposed to stay out of Gaza. They don't, but they don't have walls there, but they have the towers, and it's not the wall like the West Bank wall, but it's the barbed wire and all this. And from the towers to into the land for 300, what is it? It's not yards. It's something else. I don't know my measurements. The people cannot even grow anything. And so then that's taken away some of their land. Now, Gaza is about 5 to 7 miles wide and about 20-some miles long, that strip.
Mm-hmm.
And right. So you know it doesn't have that much land to begin with, but they have. In fact, one of my friends sent me a tape that he was one of the people that was out there trying to. They had internationals there too, but they were harvesting wheat or something, and they had a donkey and the cart, and they were putting it on the cart, and they were being fired at from the towers.
You know, it almost reminds you of East and West Berlin.
Yeah, it does.
And you can relate to that.
Yeah.
You're talking about the towers and like that, and that was a very sad point in the history of the German nation. How invading armies and invading nations again divided a group of people.
Yeah.
Which, again, talking about Holocaust.
Right.
Ruthann. Have you ever denied a Holocaust occurred in Germany?
never. That was
I mean, I've seen that accusation. you know.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, I heard about it. Somebody.
I mean, I've never heard you deny that, but I've heard accusations.
Right. I think it wasn't the way we were told. And I mean, I've seen some tapes. Some Jewish people were talking about how the gas chambers, supposed gas chambers, weren't. And I mean, I'm not saying that there weren't any, but I am saying that the numbers were wrong. That also, a lot of people starved to death in the camps at the end of the war because the Germans could not get food to them.
Right.
And we all know, all the time, if you can't get food to people and they're sick, disease just runs through, whether it was
one of the things,
or wherever. Yeah.
That was a good point that you brought up, Ruthann, is because when you look at the people that were in those concentration camps, they weren't only Jews.
Well, no. There were Jehovah's Witnesses, and there were gypsies.
They had some blacks there. People that were captured in other countries,
right,
that weren't necessarily just Jews, but
right,
they had people from all over Europe at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now more people were killed in Poland, or died, I should say, in Poland than in Germany.
Died.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But there were all the Catholics, the gays, just people. Well, and of course, it's true that people who had mental or physical disabilities were rounded up. They were some of the first because they just didn't need them. But today I just saw a picture of some of the mothers and babies in one of the camps. And the mothers are holding the kids. It looks like a dorm room, and everybody's smiling. And the thing is, we were told some lies.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, I've never denied that a horrible thing happened, and I think it's
right,
horrible anywhere, just
right,
like in Palestine. But any time that you do anything to take someone's freedom away for no reason except your own greed, your own misguided self, I think it's wrong.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking about in the 60s, and I'm just going back on things that I had seen in papers and magazines. It was almost like there was a pride of what took place in Japan at the end of the war.
Yeah.
And people don't see these pictures today of how people were just completely maimed and how it destroyed two cities and the way it just completely obliterated two cities right off the map. And these are some of the things that when we, again, just getting back to when I think of Holocaust, those things are in my mind. And what you're saying took place in Germany, you can't deny it. And I don't think we should deny any of it.
Absolutely.
And these
not.
Are things that we need to have. We need to, so we don't repeat history over and over again. People need to see what the consequences are of
right,
in the past.
But
and
people
we don't.
They don't want to. Like you were saying,
the system
mm-hmm,
doesn't want us to know.
Right.
Because if they did the same thing like what they did during the Vietnam War and let us see what was taking place in Iraq, well, Afghanistan now, we would be out in the streets again. So
I believe
the system,
it.
They don't want us
right,
to know. Because we really want to know, because we could see in the 60s and 70s, everyone wanted to know.
Yeah. But
they got home
and
they turned
right,
on the television, and even though it was very ugly, they still turned on the news every day.
Yeah.
Because they were showing us, I mean, we saw it live. You know, they say, well, we got this person here, and this is what we're going to do.
Well, they
and
were doing
it,
body
it wasn't pretty.
And, no,
it wasn't pretty.
It wasn't pretty. And what this country did in Vietnam is abysmal. It is,
another Holocaust.
It was. We committed Holocaust.
Right.
The women and children, and just, you know, they wanted bodies. They didn't care who it was, whatever.
Right.
It's horrible. War is not pretty. But, right, if people in this country would see the effects of white phosphorus and things like that,
right,
I would hope that they would understand, you know, this is not good, and we're supporting it. It's our white phosphorus that the Israelis used during cast lead operation,
right.
Possibly during the last one. We're not sure yet. And if you've seen pictures of those babies that are still being born in Iraq, deformed because of the chemicals, I mean, that just makes you sick. There's no way that you can support what our government does if you ever see these. And so when people talk about collateral damage, and, you know, I try to show them something, they don't want to see it. Because basically, I think most people are pretty good at heart, and they know that once they learn something, it's their responsibility to do something about it. And they, so they don't want to know because they're comfortable.
Right.
You know, sitting on their butt watching American Idol or some so-called reality show. You know, don't get me started on that. But,
you know, the thing is, you can lead people into war just by keeping them comfortable. You know, they'd be ready for the next war. Like, well, all of a sudden you pop something right in front of them, giving them a reason to go to war when they haven't seen everything that led up to it. But I'm getting off on a tangent here.
But that's true. You know, I do that all the time.
Ruthann, again, this may be a little touchy, and you know, but I'm just looking at some of the things because, you know, I've known you for some time, and and some of the things I hear, I don't like to hear false accusations. I want to hear it from you. I want to hear what you have to say. But some people on the left and also the center have claimed that you are anti-Semitic.
Okay,
why would anyone label you as being anti-Semitic?
Because they're acting like idiots. And yes, you know who I'm talking about, one of the socialists that ran for office. He ran and didn't get it. And I'm glad because he's showing his ignorance by not checking things out. Now, anybody who has a clue knows that many Arabs are Semites also.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a Jewish thing. So,
and it's a language.
Right. And to say that
different
I'm anti...
Based on languages. Mm-hmm.
Right. One of my closest friends in this country is a Jewish woman from Israel. One of my ex-boyfriends of like 3 or 4 years is Jewish. I have a good friend in Jerusalem that we talk on the phone frequently. You know, it's like, don't tell me, and actually, I mean, he and I disagree on some things. We agree on most things. But, you know, why would I be anti-Semitic? That makes no sense to me. What, I'm going to pick on, I'm going to be against some Jews and some Arabs and not the other Arabs? You know, these people make no sense. I am very anti-Zionist. And I'm the first person to say
that. The next thing I was going to ask.
Okay.
Because you have also been, you have been labeled everything. I mean, you've been labeled that you're anti-Zionist. I mean, what is all of this about?
Well, okay.
That's another one. I mean, they have placed that label on you that you are anti-Zionist and that you oppose the state of Israel, and you probably do oppose the way the politics is there in Israel.
But why are
all these labels being placed on you?
Because they're ignorant people. You know, Zionism isn't, and I know a lot of people in this country.
First of all, what is Zionism? Could you explain that to our listeners?
Yeah, it's a form of nationalism.
Okay.
For Jews and Jewish culture, I mean, it's just basic. It's not a religion, and that's where some of these people, especially in this country, don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
They and you know, then also they're working to cause the apocalypse. So you know, they're so weirded out. But Zionism, and it was to get a homeland for the Jews. And you know, the thing is, I'm not quite sure why, except that Britain and the U.S. and some other European countries felt guilty because they did not want Jews to settle in those countries. And so since Britain had a mandate in Palestine, it was finally decided that they could have Palestine. Even though, here's something a lot of people don't know. In 1928, the Supreme Soviet Union, the executive committee gave land to the Jews to colonize in the an area by Manchuria.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, not Manchuria, Mongolia, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the thing is, this was, no, I'm near Manchuria, larger than Israel. It's the size about of Belgium and Holland combined.
Why was that rejected?
Several thousand Jews moved there.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand it, some are still there. So I don't know. The winters were cold. Summers were rainy. And let's face it, Palestine is, it gets cold, but it gets pretty warm, too. So I don't know why it was rejected.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some. Well, Herzl, who in the 1890s, he's sort of considered the father of Zionism, maybe. He was thinking more along the lines of Argentina or Palestine. And eventually then it was Palestine. But Uganda was
right.
The countries that was thought of as a place. So it's just strange how it ended up there. There was probably a lot of pressure there again. Even back then, people, there have been some far-seeing people in high places. And so, they had to have some type of foothold. I mean, if the British weren't going to keep it, then they wanted something that...
When you say foothold, what do you mean by foothold?
In the Middle East.
In that region, okay.
Yeah. And I think that's probably the reason, because if the British would have kept it as under a mandate, that would have been okay. They would have figured. But, I mean, the United States and others. But, that wasn't working too well. And so it's like, okay, well, then let's make it a country for the Jewish people. Did you know the United States turned away a boat or ship of Jews that were coming from after the Second World War or during, trying to find refuge? And
mm-hmm.
and the United States turned them away. See, the United States did not want to take in these people. And that is a crime. I mean,
right.
a moral crime. It's a sin, whatever
moral.
You want to use.
And we consider, like I say, a world without borders.
So
we're citizens of the world.
I mean,
so it's definitely a moral crime. Any type of segregation is a moral crime.
Yeah.
We only have a few more minutes here, and I'm going to get into a little bit of politics and sort of in the same vein of what we've been talking about thus far, but I just like I said, going into a different direction, would you say the Israeli government, not the Israeli people, would you say the Israeli government is a threat to peace in the Middle East?
Oh, yes, because they don't want peace, and so they keep stirring things up.
You say they don't want peace.
No.
So if they don't want peace, what do they want?
They like it the way it is. They really don't want – they don't want – to go to war with Iran, they would like the United States to. They're trying to push that, but
they don't want peace. Sometimes what they want is aggression, because aggression is not peace.
Exactly,
it doesn't bring peace.
Well, and there's a lot of money, as to be made from war.
Right.
Just think of all the companies.
Trillions.
Uh huh. All the companies that would have to actually find another use for their products. They'd have to start making something else if we stopped murdering our brothers. There's a lot. No, Israel doesn't want peace. That isn't what they want. But when I say that, I'm talking about their government, because
mm-hmm.
there's a couple,
many of the people there want peace.
Well, right. They join in the demonstrations. They do their own demonstrations. They are part of the demonstrations in the West Bank. Every Friday, there's a big one in the West Bank. And I want to say the two causes that are near to me. It's funny, are very, what do I want to say, understood and worked for in Israel. One is equality for gays and lesbians,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and they're very open I mean, you know, they talk about being the gay capital of the world or something. I mean, Israel's very open about that. And another thing is veganism. There's more vegetarians, like, per population in Israel than there are here. So, I mean, so that they're very and the movement I'm involved with in support of 269 Life got its start in Israel. I'm these people who don't know me, who are too whatever to even take the time to ask me. They're just all wet. I don't have any anti-Semitic bone in me.
Well, I know that myself.
I know you know that. I know.
Ruth Ann, should the U.S. government continue funding Israel, the Israeli government,
not.
To the tune of tens of billions? Let me say, with the billions, tens of billions of dollars to keep that country heavily armed and with aggressive posture?
Absolutely not. We have 1 in 4 children in our country going to bed hungry. We can't afford to help them. We can't afford to help their parents. We have so many homeless, and yet we have all these empty houses, 18 to 20 empty houses for each homeless person. We can't afford. Our social programs we're cutting, but we can afford to give money to Israel. No. This is just plain stupid. It's
yeah,
immoral.
What you say about housing, we have, for every 18 houses that are vacant, you have 3 people that are homeless. Something's wrong with that picture.
Right. We could put somebody in, you know, these homes somehow. We've gotten our priorities all messed up. Really.
You know, we talk about, it was a joke that President Obama got the Peace Prize. It was a real joke. But
that was a nightmare.
Pardon me?
No, it was a nightmare. I woke up, my radio was on, and I heard it, and I did think it was a joke. And then
right.
when it wasn't, it was just a nightmare. I mean, I couldn't.
Now, you can call me a Peace Prize denier when it comes to President Obama. I'm a denier of that. Anything but peace.
Yeah, that was, I mean, and it's turned into even more of a joke as time goes on.
Oh, it is. I don't think most of the world took that serious, especially when they see drones going over, over flying over various countries. They're taking out targets. They aim for one person, and they take out, almost a dozen other individuals
right.
in a way that we have been so aggressive. But anyway, I'm getting off on a tangent
but,
here.
But no, that was a joke. The whole drone thing is absolutely horrible. You know, like they kill people and then they it's a two-striker because then the people's family and friends are trying to have the funeral and you know the funeral procession and then they go in and kill more. They kill them.
I think they should. I think the Nobel Prize Committee. I think they really should demand or request that he return that prize because he by no means did he deserve it.
No,
I only have like around another 3 or 4 minutes here, but and just a couple of the questions I wanted to get to. One of those being, you know, with the U.S., you know, we are always talking about pursuing this road to peace in the Middle East while Israel is constantly on, being aggressive there in the Middle East. But can we truly say that we are pursuing peace when an ally is in such an aggressive posture?
Well, no, we're not pursuing peace there at all because if we were, we wouldn't be funding
them.
So
it's a farce.
It's a farce. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. No, we're not after peace. And you know the other thing about all the other countries that were droning, it's like you do not take democracy to some place with a bomb. Sorry, people, it doesn't work like that.
A couple other questions: is Israel a serious threat to Iran?
They're a serious threat in the fact that just like they've already gone in and done a few underhanded things. Possibly, because they want to get U.S. and some other countries involved in this. So they may do something, another false flag, because they're good at that. So I would say they are a threat that way.
Are they a threat to Syria?
Sure.
Israel?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And Lebanon. Yeah.
And Lebanon. Right.
Yeah.
What I'm going to do, and the information that you provided today, I wanted to just have you to give your side, present your side, so people can make up their own minds. And in addition to that, when people hear the information that we discussed today, I want them still to make up their own minds, because when it comes to who's right and who's wrong, it's going to still be in the court of public opinion when people
sure.
look at it,
sure.
when they receive all the information. We have a couple more minutes, Ruth Ann. I would like for you just to share some of the programs that you do on a regular basis. As I mentioned, you sponsor this program. But why don't you take just a couple of minutes just so people can know about some of your other programming.
Ah, okay. Well, on Wednesday night, we have Gather Round, and that's sort of one of those around the campfire talks. This Wednesday, in fact, it's going to be cooperation and collaboration, and I've got four guests coming in from, they're all from Roundtree 7, but one has a radio show, one's a blogger, one has a newspaper with citizen journalists. The other heads up Roundtree 7 and is a writer. And they have amazed me the way they cooperate with each other and with people outside that group. And so we're going to talk about that because, you know, cooperation is the future. And then on Thursdays, let's see, Gather Round is at 8 o'clock. On Thursdays at 6 o'clock, these are central times I'm giving, is the Green Egg radio show. And Green Egg is the oldest pagan e-zine. It used to be a print magazine. Now it's an e-zine. And the editor and another lady from Pentacle Project are the hosts on that. On Friday night, we have Feed Your Head. And there's two different hours there of just hour-long interviews with people of interest on all kinds of topics. Coming up, we've got... let's see, I'm trying to think right now. Jonathan Mark is going to be here. He did the Dark Legacy 9/11 and JFK movie. It's wonderful. Also, Damon Leff from South Africa, he's going to be here talking about the witch hunting. And it's horrible if you're not up on that. It is just absolutely terrible. So, you know, a lot of variety. And then you're here every Monday giving the socialist views. And that's what I wanted to say. I'm a socialist. These are my views. This is not necessarily the Socialist Party's views, because it's one of the great things about being on the left.
Socialist Party.
Or any Socialist Party views. I mean, because
right.
this is the thing about being on the left. Hey, you're supposed to be welcoming people of whatever, diverse views, you know?
I really appreciate you joining our program today. What is your contact information? How can people be able to reach you or even through Facebook?
Okay, yeah, I'm very easily accessible through Facebook, Ruth Ann Amartya Feo, A-M-A-R.
I think you need to spell that.
Yeah, A-M-A-R-T-E-I, F as in Frank, I-O. That's a good West African name. It's Ghanaian.
Okay.
And then also R-A- Amartefeo at yahoo.com.
And once again, we'd like to thank Ruth Ann for joining the program today. As I mentioned, she's a sponsor of this program. You can also share your comments on the Socialist for the Socialist Insight just by going to stuartalexandercares.com and just click right on the comment section. Also, we're going to save around 5 minutes or so, 5 to 10 minutes next week toward the end of our program next Monday. And if you'd like to have any comments in regards to this show today, be certain just to dial 718-664-6436. And Ruth Ann will join us toward the end of the program if you have any questions or comments. Once again, thanks again for joining the program. We look forward to seeing you or having you to visit us next week.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Thank you, Ruth Ann.
Bye-bye.